This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
But right now we go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, where one of the preeminent baseball columnists joins us right now, Mike Petriello from MLB.com. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Preeminent. Thanks for joining us, man. Good word? Is that a good word for you?
I like it. Don't ask me to spell it, but I like hearing it.
We're not here for spelling. We're hardly here for math.
No, that's a real good point. So, hey, Mike, yesterday we talked about the atrocious hitting in Major League Baseball right now, the lowest batting average, composite batting average in Major League history going on this season, strikeouts way up, the 14 highest strikeouts per game in Major League Baseball history the last 14 seasons. And we kind of kicked around, does something need to be done about this? Or, as one of our callers said, the natural evolution of the game is going to correct this. What do you think happens here? And does anything need to be done?
Well, first of all, I would relabel atrocious hitting with incredible pitching, because okay. I think it's more about a credit to the pitchers than it is a detriment to the hitters. And
Dan feels the same way.
Yeah, and as to the caller who said, like, it's, you know, it's going to correct itself. I don't know. There's like an old joke where people are like, oh, you know, is technology cyclical, or are beepers going to come back? Like, no, they're not. Like, it's not going to naturally correct itself. Pitchers are too dominant. Like, that is the number one thing. I know people love to point to strikeouts and say, well, it's because of the shift and it's because of launch angle and this and that. And it's not that. I mean, if you look at the way pitchers throw, they are going to labs. They're going to velocity labs, literally, to, you know, pitch in front of sensors and cameras and figure out not only ways to increase their velocity, which for how many years did you think you couldn't teach velocity? And now clearly you can, but to get more movement on their pitches. I mean, this is what guys do, and you can see it in the numbers, right? Velocity is up. Like, an average fastball right now is like 93.3, the average, you know, and fastballs are not being thrown as often because everybody's learned that breaking pitches are so much harder to hit and they spin more. And the spin rate is up. And when you think about people who are like, well, strikeouts are up because of the shift, well, it's not true. As you mentioned, we're about like 15 years into strikeouts going up. And, you know, the shift rage is only, what, 4, 5, 6 years old. So to me, that changes have to be made. And it's got to be about making life harder on pitchers. That's the only way things change.
So what would you do to help make life harder on some of the pitchers? Would you lower the mound? Would you move it back? Would you change the baseball? What ideas would you have to help it?
Very first thing I would do would be to limit the number of pitchers on a roster and in a game. Because I think this all comes back to trying to make sure that pitchers can't necessarily throw at max effort every single pitch, which is clearly what they're doing because starters don't need to pace themselves. Relievers come in for one inning. You know, if you want to get baseball back to the way it looked when, you know, whatever era you liked, when starters were going a little deeper in game, you got to make sure that there's a way for them to do that. So if you don't have like an endless bullpen available for the manager and you have to kind of force the pitcher to pace himself a little more, I think that would help. So that's the first thing. Second thing I would do would be to put in a pitch clock, and not just for pitchers, for batters as well, right? And that does two things. First, it helps the pace of play, which everybody's always talking about. And second of all, you know, there's some studies that say the longer a pitcher takes between pitches, the more of his velocity he can regain, you know? So if you want to get away from throwers and back to pitchers, I think that's the first two things to do.
That's interesting about limiting the number of pitchers on a roster. With arm health and arm care, do you think the Players Union would go for something like that? Or would they have no choice?
Yeah, that's the trick. I mean, obviously, you've got the baseline of the league and the union not being in agreement on much of anything to start with, right? So that's always going to hang over everybody's heads. But I think you have touched on something important there. The union is made up of, I guess it's not exactly half pitchers, but, you know, for the sake of argument, let's say that it is. Half of the union will not be very happy about something that will limit how good pitchers can be, you know?
Yeah.
Understandably so. If I was a pitcher, I wouldn't be happy about that either.
Or how many pitchers you have.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Fewer pitchers in the majors would be fewer jobs and less service time. But totally. I don't know how you get past that factor. But if you don't make things more difficult on pitchers, I don't know what you do. I mean, you could move the mound, I guess. But I think it's a little bit of a fallacy how much that would help. Like, if you go back to the year of the pitcher in 1968, right, everybody remembers, what did they do? They lowered the mound. And that helped, sure. But that was one of only three things that happened going from 68 into 69. First of all, there were four expansion teams, so there were a lot more pitchers. But also, they shrunk the strike zone, which I think had a pretty big impact. I would consider that as well. And it's counterintuitive. People think, well, that'll just be more walks. And I don't think so. I think shrinking the strike zone would force pitchers to come into the hittable zone a little more, because that's the other issue too. Is there's so much breaking stuff, diving out of the zone, batters are going after it for these low probability swings. If you shrink the strike zone a little bit, you kind of force pitchers to maybe throw more strikes, more hittable pitches.
See, that's right where I was going to go, Mike. That I think is the solution to anything, because if you can't catch up to an 100-mile-an-hour fastball coming in at that top of the strike zone or even the breaking stuff, and that if you shrink the strike zone by even, I think, a quarter of an inch, I think it would do wonders to help offense in this game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's nice, too, because there's a lot of precedent for it. You know, the strike zone has changed, you know, either by the rule book or just by the way that umpires called it many times over the history of baseball. And not only that, it's something that's really invisible to the common fan. Like, you cannot go and sit in the bleachers and see that the strike zone is different, right? It's like a seamless change, as opposed to some of the other stuff we're talking about where it's very visible, you know, moving the mound backwards and all this stuff. So I think there are ways to do it. I think it's tough for two reasons. One, you know, like we said, agreement between the league and the union is tough to come by, especially this year with the CBA coming up. And anytime you make any sort of change, you know, there's such a loud and vocal contingent of the traditional fan base who is like, baseball's perfect, it's never changed, don't change it. And it's like, come on, it's always changed. There's divisions, we have the DH, there's integration. Like, baseball now does not look like the same sport it did when Babe Ruth played, and we shouldn't pretend that it is.
How many different versions of the baseball have we had, for Pete's sake? I mean, that tells you all you need to know right there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you go back to the earliest days of the sport, like in the 19th century, the fielders didn't wear gloves. The batters could tell the pitcher where to throw the ball. You know, there was a time where you had to throw it underhand. I mean, you take that, and now you think about, like, the caliber of athletes we have today is unbelievable. Like, without question, I think we have the best athletes playing baseball that we have ever had. And I don't think we should assume that the way the game was played when everybody was, you know, me, right, 5'6 and 150 pounds, not 5'6, but you know what I mean, it should be the same way that the guys now with these athletes can play.
Mike, the one thing about changes, and I think something has to happen, because I don't enjoy the game as much as I did when there were more base runners, and it's just a different game that to me is not quite as appealing. But the dimensions of the bases and the pitcher's mound almost feel sacred cow to me. And I say that knowing that every ballpark has different dimensions in the outfield, but basketball courts, you know, 10-foot-high hoop, 100-yard football field, those feel sacred, the 90-foot bases and the 60 feet 6 inches. Is 60 feet 6 inches sacred, or could you see actually moving the mound back a foot or so as they're trying in the minors this year, in the Atlantic League, I guess?
I think it's a sacred number, but it's not like we've never done this before. And I know we're going back to the 19th century here, but it wasn't always 60 feet, 6 inches, you know? So it's not like
right.
This has never happened before. I think my bigger concern is if that becomes a rule, you know, who has to go tell every high school groundskeeper on the planet that you have to move your mound back now? Because that
exactly.
doesn't sound very fun to me. Here's what I like about that rule. I like that it's being tested, because everything about it has been very theoretical so far. You know, ideally it's like the mound moves back, the velocity at the plate is a little lower, so that could help the hitters. But then also, is that more time for breaking pitches to break? You know, so now the curveball is going to get some extra movement on it and make that harder. And I don't know. Nobody knows. We can talk about it. We can theorize about it. But now we're actually going to get some data. So it's fascinating to see, because maybe at the end of the year you look at it and say, oh yeah, this didn't help. This actually made things worse. And now we know that and we can try something else. And if you don't try and experiment, you're never going to find out what's good or bad.
Mike Petriello, MLB.com, StatCast writer. Of course, the StatCast broadcast on ESPN2, which has been fantastic. And I'm only mildly heartbroken you're not bringing it back until July, though it isn't your fault. I am, man. That you guys, you, Benetti, and Eduardo Perez is fantastic theater. So
Thank you.
The Cleveland Indians have done a fantastic job of pitching this entire season, and they have done an absolutely rancid job at being able to make contact with the goal of winning every game 1-0. Is this just bad luck, or is this ball club?
Well, we're about 20% of the way through the season, right? And at this point in the year, everybody's trying to look and see, okay, well, what's real? What's a fluke? What's small sample? All of that. And when I look at Cleveland, I generally look at the team and I think to myself, well, if you'd told me 2 months ago this is how the season would look, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that tracks. Like, you look at the offense. I would have expected Jose Ramirez to be really good, and he has. I would have expected Franmil Reyes to hit with power, and he has. And everywhere else, I didn't expect all that much. You know, I was like mildly interested in Josh Naylor based on what he did in the playoffs last year, but that was, what, 2 or 3 games? He hasn't done that much. None of this is surprising. Like, this has not been a good offense for the last couple of years outside of Lindor and Ramirez. And obviously Lindor is gone, not that he's doing great. And the pitching staff has been fantastic. I mean, as you would expect, Bieber's really good. You know, Savali and Plesac are pretty good. And the bullpen looks amazing. Like, Karinchak, I thought outside of Cleveland, was maybe the most underrated pitcher in baseball. And it's cool to see Class A, you know, show up and do this. And my God, you've even resuscitated Brian Shaw somehow, which is really interesting to me. But yeah, it's sort of as expected. This pitching staff was going to be good. Offense wasn't. I think I picked them third in the division. And, Minnesota hasn't played well, so maybe I'll bump them up to second. But, you know, so far, I think it's what you see is what you're going to get.
Mike, on Twitter, you responded to a John Morosi tweet about Albert Pujols perhaps being on the Dominican Republic team for the upcoming Olympic qualifier in Florida. And you said that'd be great. It's hard to see Pujols ever playing in MLB again, so this would make the Olympics way more interesting. You don't think a team signs Albert?
No, I don't. I mean, listen, if not for the contract, he wouldn't have been playing already, right? Like, he was there because he'd been paid to be there. And I hate that, you know, he's, what, 41 now? I hate that younger fans over the last, like, 5 or 6 or 7 years have only seen, like, this version of Pujols and not, like, yeah, the legendary superstar Inner Circle Hall of Famer who is in St. Louis for, like, even now. Like, he's clearly going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he has not been even a league average hitter since 2016, which is, like, a long time ago. And he's not, you know, a full-time first baseman, like, defensively. So it's like, is there a fit for him anywhere? I guess a lot of it depends on him, on whether he, you know, really meant it when he's like, I don't want to be a bench player. I want to play every day. I don't know who's going to sign him to do that. You know, the bat is below average. The fielding is below average. He's the slowest runner in baseball. Again, I hate, like, saying negative things about him because he was one of the top 10 or so right-handed hitters in the history of the game, I think. But it's just hard for me to see another fit for him on a team that's trying to win this year.
Mike, how should a career end for a great player like that? You know, think about Jeter, and he took the victory lap, and that was okay. I read something that said if Pujols had said he was going to retire at the end of the year, the Angels never could have cut him. They would have had to have stuck with him just because of basic principles. How should a guy end his career like, you know, a guy like Pujols? We had Jim Thome here, and Jim ended up playing on so many teams for so many years, you know, just bouncing, bouncing, bouncing. What do you think? How should these things come to a close?
I think that's an interesting question. I think that if Pujols had remained with the Cardinals this entire time, if he was a one-team player like Jeter was, yeah, it doesn't go down this way, you know? I think it's a little different since, you know, his best years were not with the team he was on. There's no right answer to this because, you know, you look at, I think they're like Mike Schmidt, you know, who played all those years with the Phillies, and then one day in the middle of the season, he's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to go. You know, you also think of Alex Rodriguez, different circumstances, sure, but they kind of said, hey, we're going to let you go and you're going to get the next couple of days. And then we're going to, you know, at the end of the weekend or whatever it's going to be, that's going to be that. It's unfortunate. Like, I heard people on Twitter saying that he should have retired 3 years ago and, you know, not earned the rest of his money. And it's like, no, come on. Like, the man signed the contract, he has earned the money. That's fine. He's not going to retire. But it feels to me this probably should have been done in the offseason. I think the complicating factor there was that they had a new general manager, right? They just hired Parmazian. Is that the first thing he wants to do is come in and jettison Pujols? That's tough. I don't think they expected it to play out this way. I think they also, in the winter, obviously, you know, you weren't sure what you were going to get out of Ohtani at DH. You weren't sure if he was going to be able to play much around pitching. You weren't sure if he was going to, you know, hit. And obviously he's been fantastic. Jared Walsh has shown up and he's been fantastic. So this wasn't the way I think anyone would have written it. But I also think this is a team with Trout and Ohtani, and they're not winning, and they can't give plate appearances to a guy who doesn't help them do that. So this isn't the ideal way, but I think at this point in time, it's kind of what they had to do.
Mike, can't wait to have you on with us again. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks. Take care.
Take it easy, man.
Mike Petriello, MLB.com, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.